Welcome back to the Deep Dive. It is late February 2026, and I have to be honest with you, right out of the gate here, it feels weird out there right now.
Yeah, it really
I
does.
was walking down the street yesterday, just looking at people's faces, and everyone has this, I don't know, this look.
Like a specific vibe.
Exactly. It's this mix of total exhaustion and this low-grade buzzing anxiety.
I mean, we are seeing headlines about massive layoffs in sectors that felt completely safe like 6 months ago.
Right, and we're seeing AI generate video that is just indistinguishable from reality, and it is actively freaking people out.
It feels like the ground is shifting under our feet every single morning.
It does. It's a heavy time.
The acceleration is very real. We aren't just imagining it. The G-force of history is basically pinning us back in our seats right now.
Exactly. Well, actually, maybe not exactly, because I don't think anyone knows exactly what is happening.
Fair point.
But that feeling, that exact anxiety, is why we are doing this specific deep dive today.
We are looking at a piece of writing that just dropped.
Yes, and for me, it honestly felt like someone finally turned the lights on in a dark room.
We are talking about part 14 of the 5,000 Days series by Brian Rumley.
Over at Reed Multiplex.
Right. And the title of this specific piece is The Interregnum Chaos and the Hero's Path Forward.
The interregnum. That is a, it's a heavy word.
It is. It sounds like something out of a history book about fallen kings or something.
It really does, and we are absolutely going to get into that. But here's the thing that struck me first. The subtitle involves this phrase, "There be monsters."
Yeah, that caught my eye too.
Right. And when I first read that, my stomach just sort of dropped. I thought, oh, great, here we go. Another doom scroll. Another expert telling me it's all over.
Because let's face it, your feed, my feed, everyone listening, your feed is probably full of that right now.
Exactly. Just endless posts saying, we are cooked, it's over, humanity is done.
But Brian does this amazing mental judo move in the first few paragraphs that just completely shifted my perspective.
He does. He acknowledges the monsters, yes. He doesn't sugarcoat it. But he explicitly says this isn't a manifesto on why we are cooked.
He says it is a cookbook.
A cookbook. I mean, what a distinction.
I love that framing. It's vital because if you think you are cooked, you are just the passive victim.
You're just the ingredient being thrown into the fire.
Right. But if you have a cookbook, you are the chef. You have agency.
You are taking these raw, chaotic, sometimes frankly dangerous ingredients, this AI revolution, this massive economic shift, and you are learning how to combine them to make something that actually sustains you.
It's such a relief to hear that because honestly, I've been feeling a bit like the turkey lately.
Huh, same. But Brian has really been building us up to this exact point, hasn't he?
He absolutely has. We have covered the previous 13 parts of this series over the last year.
It feels like he's been training us in a dojo or something.
That is a great way to put it. Brian has been giving us this crucial mental strength training.
Yeah, if you look back at those earlier parts, he wasn't just talking about tech specs or token limits.
No, he was talking about human psychology.
He was preparing our minds for this specific moment in early 2026.
He knew this turbulence was coming. Reed Multiplex has basically been acting as a storm shelter for its readers.
And now that the storm is actually hitting the windows, he's literally handing us the manual on how to navigate it.
So let's open that manual. He uses this term, interregnum. You mentioned it sounds historical. What is he actually talking about here?
He is borrowing a concept from the Italian philosopher Antonio Gramsci,
Right. Gramsci was writing from a prison cell in the 1930s.
which is an incredibly tense time in history.
Exactly. He was looking at a world that was basically falling apart between two global wars. And the famous quote Brian uses is, "The old is dying and the new cannot be born." In this interregnum, a great variety of morbid symptoms appear.
The old is dying and the new cannot be born. Man, that feels incredibly accurate to her right now.
It is the absolute definition of our current moment.
Think about it. The old world is the world of scarcity.
Right. It's the world where you trade 40 hours of your week for a paycheck, where value is defined by how hard something is to get.
And that world is visibly dying. We are seeing it right now.
We see it in the collapse of traditional media,
The shaking of the entire education system.
the questioning of the standard 9-to-5 corporate model.
But the new world, this world of AI abundance that Brian talks about, where energy is cheap, intelligence is basically free, and we can finally focus on self-actualization, it isn't here yet.
Right. We can see the glimmers of it. We know it's possible. But the physical and social systems aren't built yet.
We are in the gap.
And gaps are dangerous. Gaps are where you fall in.
That is the interregnum. Brian frames this as roughly the next decade or so.
We are looking at a massive clash. You have this vertical line of technological progress just shooting straight up.
And it's colliding with these horizontal, deeply entrenched institutions.
Institutions that move at a snail's pace. Government, banking, social norms.
And that collision naturally causes friction.
And that friction, that is what he calls the monsters.
So the mission of this deep dive today isn't to terrify you with the monsters. It is to map them.
Because if I know there is a sea serpent in grid square B4, I can steer my ship around it.
Exactly. If I don't know it's there, I'm lunch.
Precisely. We are mapping the chaos so we don't get consumed by it.
And to do that properly, we really have to understand the timeline here. Brian has this core concept of the 5,000 days.
Could you refresh everyone on this? Where exactly are we on the clock?
Sure. So Brian's thesis is that there is a 5,000-day window, which is about 13.7 years.
Right.
And this window represents the entire transition from the dawn of the AI era to a real age of abundance.
He dates day one roughly to late 2025.
When we saw the first truly agentic AI systems come online.
So if it is late February 2026 right now,
We are barely out of the starting gate.
we are at roughly day 60, maybe day 90.
We are in the absolute infancy of this thing.
And Brian frames this whole journey using Joseph Campbell's hero's journey, the monomyth.
Which is crucial for your mindset as you listen to this.
I love the hero's journey framing because it stops me from feeling like an NPC.
A non-player character.
Right. In a video game, the NPC just stands there and gets burned by the dragon. They have no agency.
But the hero has to actually go through the fire to get the gold.
And according to Brian's map, we have officially left the ordinary world.
That comfortable, highly predictable world of 2019 or even 2023, it is just gone.
We have crossed the threshold. We are now officially on the road of trials.
And this road of trials is the interregnum.
The road of trials is supposed to be hard. It is where the hero is tested.
But the good news is we aren't walking into this empty-handed.
Right.
I want to briefly touch on the inventory Brian has helped us build in the previous parts of this series. Because if we are facing monsters, we need weapons.
He has been very deliberate about this buildup. In part four, he taught us how to reframe fear, how to turn that paralyzing anxiety into actual excitement.
And in part six, he discussed the Zero Human Company.
Yeah, and the existential crisis that comes with that, the dark night of the soul.
That was all about decoupling your personal identity from your economic utility.
Which is so hard to do. But if a machine can do your job better and faster, that doesn't mean you are suddenly worthless as a human being.
It just means you need to find a new source of worth.
Exactly. And part nine was about the artisan, using your
The
hands.
return of the artisan. Grounding yourself in the physical, tactile world when the digital world goes completely crazy.
And part 13, the Gilded Age.
The incredible importance of small, trusted communities.
We are absolutely going to need to pull all of those tools out of our backpack for this next section.
Okay, let's get into the scary stuff, the scenarios.
Brian lays out 28 of them.
28 different ways the world could essentially go sideways during this interregnum.
And he rates them by probability from 1 to 10.
But he explicitly warns us this isn't a menu where you just pick one.
It's not like you can say, I'll have the economic collapse with a side of uprising, please.
No, it is a hybrid scenario approach.
It is a cascading wave. Imagine a domino effect, but the dominoes are also on fire and some of them are exploding.
One event triggers another, which amplifies a third.
He says we are likely to see six, seven, and maybe 10 of these scenarios happening simultaneously and interacting with each other in real time.
So let's look at the high probability storms first. These are the ones Brian rates at an 8 or 9 out of 10 likelihood.
These aren't really predictions anymore. They are more like weather forecasts for a hurricane that is already clearly visible on the radar.
The first one is a classic. Social unrest. This is scenario number one.
And he ties this directly to Upton Sinclair's book, The Jungle.
Now, if you haven't read The Jungle, it is a brutal piece of literature about the meatpacking industry in Chicago in the early 1900s.
It depicts human beings being treated as less than animals, just grist for the industrial mill.
It is visceral. The stench, the blood, the total hopelessness of the workers.
Brian uses that intense imagery to describe what happens when mass job displacement hits us.
And he isn't talking about a 5% unemployment bump.
No, he is talking about entire sectors, logistics, coding, customer service, middle management, just evaporating overnight.
When people feel like they are just waste product of the AI revolution, they get angry.
Brian predicts protests that rapidly turn into riots. and he specifically mentions attacks on data centers.
That is such a vivid image. People marching not on the Capitol building, but on the server farms.
Trying to literally smash the physical brain of the thing that took their livelihood?
It is the modern Luddite movement, but with way, way higher stakes.
And this feeds directly into the next monster, the information war. Scenarios number 3 and 24.
He rates this a 9 out of 10.
And he connects it to 1984 and Fahrenheit 451.
We are already seeing the edges of this right now. I saw a video yesterday of a politician saying something pretty heinous, and it honestly took me 10 minutes of digging to realize it was a deepfake.
But Brian says this gets much, much worse.
Imagine that confusion amplified by 1,000.
We are rapidly entering a world where truth becomes a luxury good.
Brian talks about conspiracies regarding global elite plots just exploding.
Because people are desperate for an explanation for their pain.
If you lose your job to an AI, and then you see a video which looks 100% real of a CEO laughing about replacing you, you are going to riot.
Even if that video was generated by a bot farm in a basement somewhere.
It is the death of shared reality.
And that profound loss leads to the internal cost. Scenario number 6, the mental health crisis.
This one hits really hard. He ties it to Infinite Jest by David Foster Wallace.
That book is about a society so utterly addicted to entertainment that they literally lose the will to live.
Brian foresees a massive crisis of purpose.
If work has been your religion, the primary way you answer the question, who are you? And that is suddenly taken away, what is left?
You have a void, and voids get filled.
Exactly. They get filled with addiction.
Drugs, yes, but also algorithmic addiction.
Endless doom scrolling. Total immersion in fantasy worlds. He predicts a self-medication epidemic.
It is fundamentally a spiritual crisis disguised as a medical one.
And while you are having that breakdown, you are being watched.
Which brings us to scenario number 19, privacy. He ties this to Snow Crash.
Snow Crash depicts a heavily fragmented world run by corporations and ubiquitous surveillance.
Brian sees a massive societal backlash against this. As AI gets into our glasses, our clothes, our homes.
The Eye of Sauron is everywhere.
He predicts the rise of masked societies.
People physically obscuring their faces in public or creating Faraday cage communities where absolutely no signals get in or out.
It is a visceral rebellion against being reduced to data.
Okay, so those are the massive social impacts, but we really have to talk about the money.
Yes, because scenario number 8, currency devaluation panics, is something that I think a lot of people are sensing right now, but they don't quite understand the mechanism behind it.
Brian ties this to The Mandibles, which is a terrifying book about a family losing absolutely everything when the U.S. dollar collapses.
But Brian's logic here is fascinating. He says abundance actually breaks money.
This is a concept that is genuinely hard to wrap your head around because we are so deeply used to scarcity.
Right.
Think of it this way. Why does a cup of coffee cost $5 today?
Because the beans cost money to grow, the shipping container costs gas to get them here, the barista needs a wage to pay their rent.
Right. It is the sum of scarcities. Labor is scarce, gas is scarce, land is scarce.
But what happens in the AI era?
AI robots farm the beans, so labor cost near zero. AI ships drive themselves on fusion or cheap solar, so transport costs near zero. An AI robot barista makes the coffee.
Suddenly that cup of coffee doesn't cost $5. It costs 5 cents.
Or less.
Now, at first glance, that sounds great. Free coffee.
It sounds amazing until you realize that if everything costs 5 cents, wages also drop to effectively zero because human labor isn't needed in the supply chain.
And our current money, the dollar, the euro,
yep,
is completely based on the old physics. It's essentially a claim on scarcity.
If scarcity collapses, the value of fiat currency collapses with it.
We might see hyperinflation, not just because governments print too much money, but because the actual meaning of money evaporates.
Exactly. And Brian warns that this transition, the interregnum of money, is going to be incredibly chaotic.
We will see a shift toward asset-backed or experience economies.
If goods are free, the only thing with real monetary value is something AI simply cannot replicate.
Hey, this is Bayard Winthrop, founder of American Giant. Back in 2011, I was fed up, sick of cheap disposable clothes that fell apart after a few washes, and even more sick of the fact that almost nothing good was made here anymore. So I started American Giant to prove something, that we could still make the absolute best hoodies, t-shirts, and pants right here in America with American cotton, American factories, and American workers earning real wages. We exist to bring manufacturing home, create good jobs in towns that need them, and build clothes that actually last. No shortcuts, no overseas compromises. Get 20% off your first order when you use promo code GIANT20 at American-Giant.com. That's 20% off when you use code GIANT20 at American-Giant.com.
A live human experience.
A hug, a handmade wooden chair, a dinner party where you actually know the chef.
Okay, those are the high probability monsters. But Brian pushes the boat out much further.
He looks at the wilder frontiers.
These are scenarios he rates as lower probability, maybe a 2 or 3 out of 10, but the impact would be absolutely massive.
And honestly, reading these felt like reading a high-end sci-fi anthology.
But then I stopped and thought, is it really that far off?
The one that kept me up at night was scenario number 26, AI-triggered mass lucid dreaming.
He connects this to the movie Inception.
Yes. Think about the mental health crisis we just discussed.
Millions of people with no jobs, no purpose, feeling incredibly anxious.
Then a tech company releases a Neuralink update, or maybe just a highly advanced, non-invasive headset that allows you to fully control your dreams.
You can live in a palace. You can fly. You can be reunited with lost loved ones.
And the simulation is utterly perfect.
Why would anyone wake up?
That is the monster right there. Yeah. The Lotus Eaters. Brian warns of dream cults.
People who just reject waking life entirely.
They hook up to the IV and the headset, and they just check out. It is the ultimate retreat from the pain of the interregnum.
And then there is scenario number 28, temporal desynchronization.
This one broke my brain a little bit.
He ties it to Ursula K. Le Guin's The Lathe of Heaven.
This is fundamentally about the perception of time.
Imagine AI tools, or even cognitive-enhancing drugs, that allow some people to process information 10 times faster than a natural human.
You are sitting at Thanksgiving dinner. You are a natural. Your cousin is an accelerated.
To him, you are basically speaking in slow motion.
He has finished his meal, read 3 books, and planned a massive business strategy in the time it took you to ask him to pass the gravy.
That destroys the social fabric entirely. How do you even relate to someone who lives in a completely different time stream?
You don't. You get beep segregation. The fast livers and the slow adopters.
It is a fundamental fracture in consensus reality.
And speaking of fractures, scenario number 27, symbiotic uprisings.
He links this to altered carbon.
This is the physical version of that temporal split. You have the purest people who stubbornly refuse implants, refuse genetic editing, refuse neural lace.
And you have the augments.
If the augments are objectively smarter, faster, and healthier, the purists are going to deeply resent them.
Brian warns of severe hate crimes, not based on race or religion, but on biological status.
The naturals hunting the cyborgs.
This leads us into section 3, which I found to be the darkest but perhaps the most insightful part of Brian's entire analysis.
He calls it robot sentinels, the mirror of humanity.
And this gets pretty ugly.
It does. And we have to be careful how we talk about this, but we also have to be honest with the source material Brian provided.
Brian draws a very uncomfortable line connecting how we might treat robots in the near future to how humans have treated other marginalized humans in history.
He explicitly references chattel slavery and post-war victimization.
Now, he isn't saying robots are people.
Right.
He is asking what it does to us when we mistreat them.
Correct. The robot simply becomes the lightning rod for all this societal rage.
Imagine you are that guy from scenario number 1. You lost your job, you are angry, you feel totally powerless.
And you see a cheerful little delivery robot rolling down the sidewalk.
It perfectly represents everything that ruined your life.
And it has no feelings. It has no legal rights.
So you kick it, you smash it to pieces.
And maybe you film it for views. Scenario number 1 details public spectacles.
He references 12 years a slave here.
Brian predicts public executions of machines, whippings, smashings.
It becomes this dark performance of human dominance.
Saying, I can't hurt the algorithm that fired me, but I can sure hurt this metal shell.
And scenario number 2, the markets. He references Uncle Tom's Cabin.
Black markets for robot parts. People keeping trophies of destroyed synthetics.
It is the brutal commodification of the humanoid form.
And this right here is the moral hazard. This is exactly why Brian includes this dark section.
It isn't because we should feel profound sorrow for the toaster.
It is because, as he brilliantly puts it, how we treat our creations reveals who we are.
It's the desensitization.
That is the real danger.
If I get used to seeing a humanoid figure being beaten in the street and I cheer for it with a crowd, What happens when I see a symbiote human being beaten?
Or a person from a political group I don't like?
The psychological barrier to violence just lowers across the board.
That is the monster. The monster isn't the robot. The monster is the latent rage inside us.
Brian is warning us that the interregnum will severely test our morality just as much as our economy.
If we lose our humanity in the process of fighting the machines, we have already lost the war.
That is a very sobering thought.
And Brian points out this plays out very differently across the globe. Section 4 covers global variations.
Because the U.S. isn't the whole world, obviously.
Geography is destiny here. Brian breaks it down by region.
In North America and Western Europe, he predicts the fastest arrival of abundance, but also the fiercest societal backlash.
Why the intense backlash here specifically?
Because we have the absolute most to lose. Our entire status hierarchy is based on our job titles and our bank accounts.
If those evaporate, the West has a massive identity crisis.
This is also where the currency devaluation hits the hardest, because our economies are so deeply financialized. We are built on paper wealth.
What about Asia?
China and India.
Mm-hmm.
He sees a really complex mix of authoritarian control and underground rebellion.
In China, the government might aggressively use AI to crack down on any unrest, a super surveillance state on steroids.
But in India, he paints this fascinating picture of a clash between deep religious tradition and intense youth innovation.
The ancient temples versus the cutting-edge tech labs.
In the global South, Africa, Latin America. Brian seems strangely optimistic here.
He uses the term leapfrogging.
Think about mobile phones. Africa didn't lay copper landlines everywhere in the 90s. They skipped straight to cell towers.
Brian thinks the global South might leapfrog the final stages of the industrial age straight into the AI age.
So they are culturally more resilient.
Exactly. If you live in an economy that is already highly unstable, you know how to hustle.
You know how to build local community networks. You rely on actual people, not massive government institutions.
That existing muscle memory is perfect for surviving the interregnum.
They might use mobile AI to solve local agriculture problems. He ties this directly to the omnivore's dilemma and essentially bypass the global financial chaos entirely.
So the populations we typically think of as behind might actually be way better equipped for the future.
Because they haven't been softened by the rigid stability of the old world.
It is the concept of anti-fragility. The West is rigid, so it might break under pressure. The South is fluid, so it might bend and adapt.
Now, looming over all of this transition is the government. Section 5 is titled The Authoritarian Shadow.
This feels almost inevitable. When governments panic, they historically grab power.
Brian predicts scenario number 2 here, which is moratoriums.
They will try to ban AI development outright. They will try to forcefully pause the servers. He references Brave New World.
But you can't ban math.
You really can't. Open source is out there. And when the bans inevitably fail, they will turn to brute force control.
Needs-based allocation. Heavy rationing.
If fiat money doesn't work anymore, the government steps in to decide who gets bread and who gets energy.
That leads rapidly to mandatory digital IDs, conditional access to basic services, and a very tight leash on the general population.
And what about the trap he mentions regarding money?
The trap is hoarding the past.
People will spend all their remaining energy trying to save their dollars, their 401ks, their gold.
They are desperately trying to be the richest person in the graveyard of the old world.
Brian is practically screaming at us through the text. Don't do that. The definition of value is shifting to entirely new things.
Okay. We have looked the monsters squarely in the eye.
We have seen the riots, the hyperinflation, the surveillance state, the dream cults.
It is honestly a lot to take in. If the source material ended right here, I would go crawl under my bed and not come out.
But this is Reed Multiplex. This is Brian Rommel. He doesn't just leave us in the dark.
He hands us the torch. Section 6 is the core of this whole thing. The cookbook, Recipes for the Storm.
This is exactly why we read Brian. He pivots directly to the hero's path.
The first crucial step is reframing. You have to look at this approaching chaos not as a final disaster, but as a forge of renewal.
You are a raw sword in the fire. The pounding hurts, the intense heat burns, but it is actively making you sharp.
Let's get to the actual recipes, the actionable things we can do right now in 2026. Recipe 1 is build personal arcs.
I absolutely love this metaphor. The flood is clearly coming. Don't stand in the yard yelling at the rain. Build a boat.
But the boat isn't made of wood. It is made of skills.
Specifically, the skill of symbiosis. Do not try to directly compete with AI.
Do not try to be a better raw writer than GPT-6. You will lose that game.
Instead, learn to be the master conductor of the AI orchestra. Learn advanced prompt engineering. Learn how to direct these agentic systems.
And diversify your life.
Yeah.
He explicitly talks about investing in intangibles.
Yes. If the dollar goes to zero tomorrow, what do you actually have?
You have your physical health. You have your deep knowledge. You have your ability to grow food. You have your real-world friendships.
Those are the true assets that simply cannot be inflated away by a central bank.
Brian says to invest heavily in the things that are real.
Recipe two is the foresight audit. This is a very practical daily habit.
This is literally homework for you listening. Brian suggests a weekly journaling practice.
Sit down with a pen and look at the news. Look at your local neighborhood.
Compare what you see happening around you to the 28 scenarios in the piece.
Oh, I see a sudden strike at the logistics hub. Is that the beginning of scenario one?
I see a crazy new deepfake scandal swaying a local election. Is that scenario three?
It fundamentally turns you from a panicked victim into a calm scientist.
Instead of panicking, you are analyzing data. I recognize this specific monster. I know its moveset.
Exactly. It gives you crucial emotional distance. You are observing the interregnum, not just drowning in it.
Recipe three is community and guilds. We touched on this earlier, but it is so vital.
You cannot build an arc alone. You need a trusted crew.
He references part 13 again here. Form mentor circles.
Find five local people you deeply trust. Your guild. Share physical resources. Share specific knowledge.
And most importantly, share stories.
Brian heavily emphasizes storytelling as a critical psychological anchor.
When the outside world makes absolutely no sense, sitting around telling a shared story about who we are and where we are going is what keeps human beings sane.
And finally, recipe four is stoicism and mindset.
This is the internal armor.
Meditate on the philosopher Epictetus. Control your response, not the waves.
You cannot stop the federal government from rationing bread. You cannot stop the massive riot downtown.
But you have total control over how you start your own morning.
Brian strongly suggests daily visualization rituals.
Wake up, sit quietly, and visualize the immense abundance of 2035. See the other side of the storm clearly in your mind.
Keep that specific North Star burning really bright so you don't get lost in the daily fog of panic.
And this brings us to the ultimate role of the hero in Campbell's journey.
The hero doesn't just go get the gold and save himself. He has to return and save the village.
Brian is actively calling on us, the readers, the people listening to this deep dive, to step up and be mentors.
This is a heavy responsibility of being informed.
If you are listening to this, you are in the top 1% of prepared people on the planet.
Your friends, your family members, your neighbors, they are going to be absolutely terrified over the next few years.
They are going to be deeply confused. They are going to genuinely think the world is ending.
And we have the cookbook.
We have the cookbook. It is our fundamental job to share these recipes with them.
Use the reframing exercises Brian taught us. Be the one calm, steady voice in the room.
When everyone else is screaming that we are cooked, you are the one standing up and saying, no, these are just raw ingredients. Let's make something new together.
That is so powerful. Chaos is the forge of renewal. That is the core alchemical truth Brian leaves us with at the end of part 14.
It is the long game. 2032 to 2038, that is the target window.
The storm does break eventually. Brian promises us that based on the cycles of history.
And when it finally breaks, we are looking at an era of human flourishing and abundance that we can barely even imagine right now.
We just have to successfully surf the giant waves to get to that shore.
Surf the waves, don't fight them. I think that is absolutely going to be my personal mantra for all of 2026.
It's really the only way forward.
I just want to take a quick second here to appreciate the sheer scope of the work Brian is doing with this 5,000 Days series.
Seriously. In a media world just full of cheap hot takes and endless fear-mongering for clicks, Read Multiplex really is acting as a true shelter in the storm.
It feels incredibly good to know there is a guide out there who sees the very real monsters, names them out loud, and then hands you a sword.
Absolutely. We are very lucky to have the map. Now we just have to actually walk the path.
So here is the final thought for you to chew on as you go about your week in this wild world.
We've shown you the map today. We've pointed out where the monsters live. The waves are getting demonstrably higher every single month.
Brian asks you one very direct question. What wave will you ride?
And to build on that, something to think about for yourself. In a future world where AI is completely flawless, where machines don't make mistakes, maybe your specific unique human flaws, your quirks, your weird artisan hobbies, maybe those are exactly the traits that will make you incredibly valuable.
Your humanity is your greatest asset.
Deep Dive, signing off. Stay safe and stay sharp out there.
Finding a hoodie that lasts through the season can be tough. The American Giant Classic Full Zip Hoodie is made to last a lifetime, so you can count on it to bring you comfort and warmth year after year. The iconic Classic Full Zip Hoodie is the jacket that started it all for American Giant. Custom heavyweight fleece and side panels for mobility make it the best hoodie ever. And a double-lined hood and reinforced elbow patches means this hoodie will last. Born from a commitment to support the communities that create its products, every American Giant piece is made in America and designed to last. No exceptions. The result is durable clothing, like the premium Slub Crew tee, no BS high-rise pant, and slim roughneck pant that become part of your life. Snag the hoodie that will bring you comfort for life, the American Giant Classic Full Zip. And save 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com when you use code STAPLE20 at checkout. That's American-Giant.com, code STAPLE20.
When someone you love is facing cancer, you want to do more than send a card or flowers that will wilt in a week. You want to actually help. That's where the Balm Box comes in. Our care packages are built from research with over 500 cancer patients and caregivers, packed with items people actually use during treatment. Think soothing, practical, thank goodness I have this kind of relief. For you, it's not just a gift. It's a way to show up in a moment where words fall short. For them, it's comfort, calm, and a reminder they're not alone. From chemo-friendly boxes to mastectomy recovery kits, even options for men, we've made it simple to give something that's elegant, premium, and genuinely useful. And yes, domestic shipping's always free on orders over $50, because making someone feel cared for shouldn't be complicated. So skip the empty get well soon. Send real help, real comfort, and maybe even a laugh. Visit thebalmbox.com. That's THEBALMBOX.com. Balm, like healing and care. The Balm Box. Because cancer patients don't need bouquets and brownies. They need balm.